Hello and welcome to the Two Guys, Three Consoles podcast. This is episode 25. My name is Jeremy J. Monster Fowler, and with me, as always, is my friend and co-host, Matt Leachman Leach.
Hi, Jeremy. How are you?
Not bad. How are yourself?
Not bad. We made it to episode 25.
We did. Who knew we would make it to a quarter of a century?
I know. A quarter of a century. 25 episodes under our belt. It's pretty... I'm happy.
Yeah.
Hopefully people are still listening to us. I haven't looked at the numbers.
I think so.
The last few days, but yeah, they're still being downloaded, so somebody's listening.
Yeah, I do wonder about the download numbers for last week's episode in particular, because although we very much enjoyed doing the spoiler casts, it's fairly niche in that it's people that have played Clair Obscur and people who have finished Clair Obscur will listen to that episode.
Absolutely.
Anyone who's not finished it, there's no point in them actually listening to it.
Probably not. I mean, the last time I looked, it was 11 views on the YouTube version of the podcast, and I think it was 25 downloads of the podcast. So what's that, 36 in total, which ain't bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got 11 subscribers on YouTube.
Yes, we have.
If it was 11 views, that's pretty good. That's everyone of the subscribers having a listen.
Probably. And if anyone's typing in Clair Obscur, like spoilers or something, maybe somebody who's not subscribed will listen to it.
Yeah, possibly. But it is what it is.
Yeah,
sorry. Anyway, I'm waffling. Should we crack straight on with some gaming news?
Yeah, you go first on this one.
Okay, so the only thing I've got this week is Drag X Drive, which is the Switch 2, it's like wheelchair basketball, isn't it, I think?
Oh, yeah, it was in the preview of the Switch 2 game.
I thought this game was a launch title, to be honest. I was kind of surprised they didn't come out on day one, because I thought it was.
Since you mentioned it, I completely forgot about the game until you just mentioned it.
Yeah, so it comes out on August 14th, but they are releasing a demo. I'm not exactly sure what date the demo is coming out on, but you have to have an NSO subscription to get the demo. And this is the one where you can use the mouse type controls.
I haven't actually used, even though I got that welcome tour, I have not used the mouse controls yet. Can you believe it?
You didn't use the mouse controls on the welcome tour?
Well, I haven't even got that far yet. So. I haven't bounced into the mini games to actually try it. Maybe I should. But have you tried them on anything?
No, I might. If I can get hold of this demo, I might give it a go.
I don't know if you're using them in Donkey Kong Bonanza or not.
I don't think so, no.
You never know with Nintendo. Yeah, they can come up with all kinds of weird and wonderful shit. As we know. Well, don't have the demo. We'll give it a try. I mean, it's a demo, isn't it? And we're both NSO subscribers, aren't we?
Yeah,
we should be able to have a go of it and let people who are maybe thinking about buying the game, let them know our impressions on the demo, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, my bit of gaming news is hot off the press. Donkey Kong Bonanza's Destruction gameplay all started as a Goomba with giant arms, apparently. So there was an interview that Nintendo put up from the development team saying that they experimented with the destructive environments using the Voxel technology with a giant Goomba with arms, basically destroying the environment.
Right.
Apparently their inspiration was taken from the Nuklatek boss in Super Mario Odyssey, which I don't remember. Apparently he had giant hands. So that was their inspiration doing this Goomba thing. Okay. So one of the game directors, Wataru Tanaka, said the programmer who created Nuklatek tried attaching those arms to a Goomba as an experiment. The Goomba could smash terrain, tear off pieces to use as weapons and throw them. Those actions felt surprisingly satisfying. And we got a sense that this destruction-based gameplay could be a compelling core mechanic. So that's where they got the inspiration from for the destructive environments in the new game, which is obviously where the day before the game comes out.
But yeah.
Interesting tidbit from the developers there.
Yeah, definitely. So the embargo dropped today. And as we were touching on a little bit before the podcast, in general, it seems to have got nines and tens.
Yeah, in general.
Gavin was pointing out for me that, like, not everywhere. Like, so Eurogamer, Guardian, and Sixth Axis all gave it an 8.
Yeah, 8's still pretty good, isn't it?
Still a pretty good score, yeah.
Yeah.
It seems to be getting a generally positive reaction.
Yeah. I mean, it's the first big proper game from Nintendo for the Switch 2.
Yes.
Can you play it on... You can't play it on Switch, can you?
No.
No, there's no Switch version. It's just Switch 2 only.
Yes. I think the only thing you can possibly do, if you've got a Switch 2 with DK Bonanza, you can potentially use the game share to play the multiplayer. So the second player could use their Switch 1.
Yeah.
Play as Pauline and we'll stream it from the person with the Switch 2 locally.
Yeah.
But how well that streaming game share system actually works, I'm very dubious of.
Dubious, yeah. It's interesting that the Pauline is the character, because in the original trailers, it was just like a faceless kind of rock monster that was on his shoulder. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
In, obviously, they wanted to reveal that it was Pauline at a later date, which they did.
Yeah.
So that's not the first time that's happened, you know, obscuring things from trailers, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So this version of Pauline is a little younger, isn't it?
Yeah, she's like a teenager, I think.
Like 12, 13, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. So I don't know if there's any explanation for that, but I mean, it's a video game. You don't really need that much explanation, do you?
No, I think it probably falls into the same sort of bracket as a Mario game, that you don't really need the plot.
No, I mean, the plot is... Peach gets kidnapped by Bowser. That's the plot.
So, yes, like a million times over.
Yeah, you don't need an explanation for these.
From what I understand, the plot of DK Bonanza is that both DK and Pauline want to dig down to the center, because if they get to the center of the earth, they get granted a wish, and Pauline wants to go home, and DK wants lots of bananas.
Of course, DK wants bananas.
Yeah.
What else does he want?
Yeah,
nothing. Does he need anything else?
More bananas.
I love that was the motivation in all the games, was it just stole his bananas and that's all he wanted back. He was, you know, dicing with death and, you know, going in mine carts and all sorts just to get his bananas back.
That's the plot of Donkey Kong Country 1, isn't it? And then Donkey Kong Country 2, Donkey gets kidnapped. And then Donkey Kong Country 3, Donkey and Diddy both get kidnapped.
Yeah, and he plays Dixie.
Yeah,
exactly. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Mm.
Well, that's it for my news.
Yeah. So we're moving on to what you've been playing.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
You want to go first?
Yeah, can do. So I'm playing some more Death Stranding 2.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very compelling game, Death Stranding 2. I think I mentioned it before on a previous episode when I was talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those games that you're like, oh, I'm starting to get a bit fed up with trudging around this, you know, the environments, and then something new comes along. Like they give you a new weapon, or they give you a new accessory, or they give you a new plot point, or something like that. It's very much the way Hideo Kojima likes to kind of dangle that carrot in front of you. Just as you're starting to wane a little bit, you're like, oh, I've got something new. I can try this out, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't remember where I'm at. I think I'm at in episode 7 now, something like that. But I've put it on hold because I've started playing Claire Obscure Expedition 33 again. After our spoiler cast last week, and you know, I was talking about it, I will mention this more later on in the podcast, but I'm going for the platinum. So I started a new game, and I'm following a guide for the platinum, but I've been playing that pretty much for the last 3 or 4 days. I haven't played anything else apart from a very quick go on Mario Kart World last night with Danielle.
Right. So my question is, are you still playing Claire Obscure on easy or story, whatever it's called, or are you going back to normal?
No, I am playing on the story mode, easy mode, yes.
Yeah,
because all I've been doing at the moment is pumping up the might attributes. I haven't put points in anything else.
Right.
So all the characters have like 50 something in might.
Wow.
So the idea of this build is that you don't lose any health, you just maximize your damage.
Yeah, so you just go in and basically one-shot the enemies before they get a chance to respond.
That's the idea. That's the idea, to get through the platinum. Kyle might be cursing me if I'm not doing it properly. You know, this is a platinum run, not a explore everything, get everything run. Although you do have to do a fair amount of, you know, I'll get through the game fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And then it'll be the grind to level 100. That's the thing. But that's all I've been playing this week. How about you?
Right. So I went back to Mario Kart World a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to unlock some more stuff. Yes. And weirdly, I think I'm closer to getting all the carts slash bikes than I am to getting all the characters and costumes.
Right, yeah.
I think when you when you've collected 3,000 coins, you will have got all the carts in the game.
Right.
I am on 2,700 for coins.
Where do you check how much coins you've got? Is it in the free? Is it in the free roam?
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember if it was in the options or something. I definitely saw anyway that.
Right. Oh, the only reason I ask is I don't think I've unlocked all the carts. I know I've unlocked all the characters and all the costumes because we discussed it on the podcast. But
yeah,
Messenger, and it is a bit of a ball to get some of them. You know, you have to go to specific areas. I followed the guide, I'm not gonna lie.
Mm-hmm.
So I got all the alternate costumes and all the characters unlocked.
Yeah, I've been trying to get this Waluigi vampire costume because he's got six costumes apparently, and I've got four of them, and yep, none of them are the vampire one.
No,
so far, can I get the vampire one for love nor money? Can I fuck?
Well, the way I did that one, because that was one of the trickier ones, on the guide, it tells you what you need to get to unlock it. And I tried that for like 10, 15 minutes. That didn't work. So then there's another area that I went to. I tried that for 10 or 15 minutes. That didn't work. Right. So I went to another area, and then within 5 minutes, I got the costume.
Which was the area you went to that you got it then? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't remember. I'm just following a guide. There's not many areas that unlock the vampire costume for Waluigi.
Right.
So it's specific things that you've got to pick up. I think it's like one of those random ones, like you have to pick up a certain colour of soda, crisps, or ice cream, whatever the fuck it is.
Right.
One of those, I think. Mm. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I'll see if I can dig out the link and send it to you.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, but yeah, it's fun to unlock the costume. I'm not sure about the carts, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the carts, you can pretty much get it just by playing the Grand Prix or the Knockout Tour, like even if you do it by yourself.
Yeah.
You can get the carts just by collecting the coins as you go.
Yeah,
but the costumes and characters seem to be a bit more of a challenge.
Yeah,
and depending on where you look, there's different ideas of what the best way to do that is. I've seen some people saying that you should play a two-player versus, and either say onto easy with characters on hard, or onto hard with characters on easy, or something, and do it that way. But I've seen other people who say that you're far better off doing the free roam mode and getting the costumes that way instead.
Yeah, I did most of my costumes in free roam.
Right.
In fact, I think I did all of them in free roam.
Right.
It's much easier to do it in free roam. Okay. Doing it through Grand Prix and Knockout Tour would take you a long time.
Yeah.
So free roam is the way to go with that one.
Okay.
So, yeah, I played some Mirror Mode. Did you unlock Mirror Mode?
No, I haven't yet.
I've been playing, trying to get the Gold Cups in Mirror Mode.
Right.
But like 3 out of the 7 cups or whatever there are.
Mm-hmm.
Not like 3 stars, but just gold cup. Because
yeah,
it's all on 150cc, but everything's reversed.
Yeah.
So it's fun. But yeah, we're just trying to get the gold cups on all of them, really. I'm waiting for them to announce like new tracks, but I suppose it's only been a month and a bit.
Oh, yes. Month and 4 days.
Yeah.
It's a bit like this. Have you seen any of the hoo-ha with people expecting a Nintendo Direct? Because you usually get one in June, and of course we didn't this year.
No.
But as I was watching a YouTuber on was talking about, they people need to take a step back and remember, like you say, it's literally a month after launch. So it's not really that surprising that they haven't really got that much to say just yet.
Not really, no. Not surprising at all, yeah.
I would have thought we'll get one in September about what's coming out for Christmas.
And I'm guessing the big thing will be Metroid Prime 4 Beyond.
Well, yeah, it's just whether that's the big Christmas game or they're going to announce another one. Or...
Surely it has to be. Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah. My other thing I've been playing this week is I finally completed Lies of P Overture.
Oh, congratulations. And how did you find it?
It's pretty good. I did get stuck on that penultimate boss for like 8 days.
Wow. Sounds tough.
Yeah. And that's one where you can't summon, and you're in a fairly small area. So even though I was playing it, I think on that point I was on baby easy mode, as I call it. So easiest difficulty level, I was still struggling with him. He's very fast, like stalker humanoid type character. So it's very much a have to block or evade. Can't rely on anything else. And he's got two phases, and phase two is extremely aggressive.
Right.
And he douses you in decay, which makes your weapon break as well as your health go down. And I, yeah.
Yeah, sounds like a tough boss.
Yeah, it was bullying.
Well done.
I did. And then I was talking to you about the fact that I then, after I beat that boss, I then got to the very last boss at the end of the DLC and was up till 1 a.m. trying, couldn't fucking do it. And then a day after, got up in the morning, had my coffee, got myself ready to play again, tried it, and literally beat him first time.
There you go. See? Yeah. We've said this before. We've said it so many times. You just do it and do it and do it, and you can't do it anymore. You put it down, come back, do it first time.
It's yeah, mad. Like I did it like 50 times. And I think I was getting tired when I stopped at 1 a.m. And I was like, sod this, I'm going to bed.
Yeah. There's something about your brain in like these, you know, when your brain's in sleep mode, something goes on where the next time you try it, you don't even think about it. You just do it, and you do it first time. I don't know what it is. It's not necessarily on a Dark Souls boss or Soul Spot type boss. It's on anything, really.
Yeah.
Like, I remember doing it years ago for like Super Mario Galaxy, I think it was.
Yeah.
Just could not get this star that I was trying to get. Tried 20, 30, 40 times on one evening, switched off, went to bed, got up the next day. Like I say, had a cup of tea, had some breakfast, did it first time. I'm like, why didn't I do it that yet?
Yeah, like, what the fuck?
It's brilliant, though, because it's a common theme, people who play, you know, a lot of video games. But I'm glad you've done it. Well done.
Yeah, thanks. And I just want to mention the story briefly was a lot more emotive.
Oh, than the actual main campaign story?
Yeah, I got into the story for the DLC a lot more than I was expecting. And I really like some of the characters introduced in the DLC to the extent where, and again, I'm trying to not spoil, but at the very end with the story, I got really into the story and the cutscene that was going on at the end, and found myself even with a bit of a lump in my throat and was
wow.
I wasn't expecting that.
That's cool.
So yeah, the shout out to what are they called? Round 8, and NeoWiz is the publisher.
NeoWiz, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to them for creating a really good story for their DLC. And like I say, it was a lot better than I was expecting, particularly at the start of the DLC. I didn't think the story... I mean, it's not like the story in the base game for Lies of P is bad.
Yeah.
But I would argue that they do a better job with storytelling than From do, because, I mean, From get a lot of plaudits for like their whole like creating lore, and you have to piece the story together yourself through item descriptions and stuff, and then not being spoon-fed to you. But to be honest, the fact that Lies of P has cutscenes and a more straightforward story that's easier to follow, I appreciated.
Absolutely, absolutely. That was, in the base game, that, you know, played through it three times. You played through it four times. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to playing this DLC. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I did the Platinum earlier in the year, just so I got that Platinum. You know, and I'm looking forward to playing this at some stage, hopefully over the summer, but so many games to play. Yeah. And on a Platinum run at the moment, so yeah, I'll put it in somehow.
Something to bear in mind with the Lies of P DLC, if you're on a first playthrough, you have to wait until chapter 9 out of the 11 chapters to be able to get access to it.
Right.
If you're on New Game Plus or anything further down the line, like New Game Plus 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 or any like that, you can get access to it from chapter 5.
Okay, that's pretty good.
It's just a lot earlier in the playthrough. But then, of course, you have to also remember that if you're on a New Game Plus, it's going to be harder difficulty overall for DLC than it would have been in the first game.
I think I've got two saves for Lies of P. I've got the original playthrough that I did, and I've got the Platinum run that I did.
Right.
The Platinum run is on New Game Plus right at the end. Mm-hmm. And the original save is just New Game. So I think I should be able to dive in on New Game, maybe. Maybe I'll try New Game Plus. We'll see.
Yeah. But that's about it for what I've been playing this week.
Okay, cool.
So we move on to Retro Corner.
Yeah, I think so.
You want to go first?
Yeah, so the one I've got this week is quite an old one. Maybe not a lot of people remember this. It's actually, I think it started as an arcade game, and it's called Space Harrier.
Yeah.
So basically, you play this guy who's like in is he in a jetpack? I think it's a jetpack.
It is a jetpack, isn't it? Yeah.
Jetpack, isn't it? And basically, flies around the screen. You know, it's a third-person perspective, so it's like from... you can go top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right, or middle. That's where your positions are on the screen. It's like a scrolling kind of first person rail shooter. Third person rail shooter.
Yes.
So that is the premise of the game. There's some bullshit story to say. It's not really important. I remember this one sticks in my mind because I played it in the arcades. And I did enjoy it in the arcades because I think there was two versions. There was a version where it was a stand-up version where you just used a joystick. And there was a version where, a bit like Afterburner, where you could sit in and it like rotated rounds as you were doing the motions on the joystick, which is pretty cool. And I was quite impressed with the arcade version. So I was glad that they released a home version. And I played it on Amstrad CPC. Mm-hmm. 464, because it came out on the Amstrad CPC, came out on the Spectrum, and it came out on the Commodore 64, I think. I'm not sure if there were later versions. I think a version did come out for the Amiga and the Atari ST. Yeah, it did. So
I think there are Master System and Mega Drive versions.
They may well be, yeah.
Because it's a Sega game.
Yeah.
And then I think this is one of those that Tengen, who made unofficial NES games, ported it to the NES.
There was a NES version.
I think so. I could be wrong on this. You should probably look into it. But I don't think Nintendo were happy about it.
Yeah.
Because eventually Nintendo won a court case against Tengen and had to destroy all of their games.
Yeah. Space Harrier NES version, also known as the Famicom version, was developed by Takara and released in 1989. Look at that.
Mad, isn't it?
I did not know there was a NES. I did not expect there to be a NES version.
I think I saw it. I think Gaming Historian did a documentary episode about the whole Tengen fiasco for NES games.
Might have to watch that.
And it was on that, I think.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't know about a NES version because, you know, NES is like an older generation compared to, like, you know, Mega Drive and Master System on it. So.
Well, I mean, it was the same as Master System.
Sorry, Mega Drive. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah,
but no, it was an entertaining game. Remember, I can't remember if you actually complete it, whether it's just like an endless third person shooter. I can't actually remember. It's been 40 years ago since I played it, nearly.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I do remember having fun with it when I was like, you know, 12, 13, maybe a bit younger. But I remember having fun with it on my Amstrad and it being a good, like, colorful, fast-paced game, and the arcade version was really good as well.
So
that's my retro this week, Space Harrier.
So mine is, and forgive me if I've already done this one before,
I don't remember you talking about this one before,
maybe, but... you haven't. Is Super Tennis on the Super Nintendo.
Cool.
Which was developed by Toes, probably I'm pronouncing that right, T-O-S-E, and published by Tonkin House. And it came out in Japan and America in 1991. Japan in the August and November in America. And it came out in Europe in 1992. And then also released in Brazil in 1993. In the sort of standard, like, South America gets everything, even
Didn't they get the Wii like years after everybody else as well?
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, Brazil's the crazy country where the Master System was like super popular up until like 2007 or something.
It's mad, isn't it? Yeah.
Because like a PlayStation 5 or PS4 cost like $1,000 over there.
Yeah.
But a Master System was still a reasonable price, so they kept just releasing games to the Master System. Is a whole thing. But anyway, Super Tennis is only a two-player game, so it doesn't use the multi-tap, but it's got three modes, being doubles, singles, and World Circuit. So the World Circuit is like the single-player mode where you go to different tournaments and the sort of standard kind of thing. And it uses mode 7 to create the sort of viewpoint you had, which you would think is sort of fairly sort of standard for tennis games these days. But you have to remember that Super Nintendo in general, 16-bit was pre-3D games, wasn't it?
True. Yes, it was.
So to create the illusion of depth with the court when you're right at the bottom or the top, you use mode 7 to create all that.
Yeah.
And what I remember is it was pretty good. It wasn't necessarily the easiest for beginners. I remember when you first start, I found it really difficult to even return a ball because you have to get the timing down.
And they're quite harsh with those types of games in those
yeah.
games. To be really on it to actually be good at it. You really did. There wasn't much wiggle room for those kinds of things. You had to really concentrate, you know, forgiving. That's it. They weren't very forgiving, those types of games. That's the word I'm looking for.
And I think I've still got, not only have I got a original cartridge, I think weirdly I've got two original cartridges. I've got a spare somehow. And I don't even know where I got the spare from. I've not got a box for either of them.
Maybe somebody gave you like it was a spare copy one day and said, okay.
I've got a carrier bag full of Super Nintendo cartridges, and this carrier bag has got two copies of Super Nintendo in it.
I don't think it's a rare cartridge though, is it?
No, it's not rare. Definitely not. It is available to play quite a lot of places. It's on the Switch NSO app for Super Nintendo, it's on there. The SNES Classic Mini. It's on there as well. So there are ways to still play it if you want to check this one out.
Yeah. I have to boot it up on the NSO and I'll play with it.
Yeah. I mean, it just depends on how much you like tennis games, really. It's not really like a simulation like you get these days. There's no like real players running it.
No. I think the most fun tennis game I played was... There was a version on the... What was it? I'm trying to remember now. Was it on the Amiga? I think it was the Amiga. Either the Amiga or the PC. I think it was a really good version of a tennis game. Mm-hmm. And then the Wii Tennis was pretty good.
Yeah.
On the Wii Sports, that was quite. I enjoyed playing that.
Yeah.
And I think I played like the Amiga. There was an Amiga version of Wimbledon, I think it was, which I really enjoyed playing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to like 1991, 92, so quite a long time ago. But
yeah,
I don't mind tennis games. Definitely, well, don't play any football games. I've never
played
a football game in my life.
tennis games are quite good fun, even if you're not particularly into tennis. I mean, you mentioned Wii Sports, the tennis, played that, and then got into, I'm not sure what it's called, is it EA one, the Super Smash Tennis? Or
Super Smash Tennis, that sounds right, yeah.
And that one used the Wiimote and the Nunchuck, so you had to actually move your character around yourself. And it also used the Motion Plus to be a bit more accurate with your swings and stuff.
Okay. And
my flatmate at the time he's not particularly a gamer or wasn't. And he got proper into this to the extent where I'd come back home and find him in the living room doing like the tennis player type pose, waiting for the computer to serve.
Brilliant.
You're like bent over in this way.
You know, it's one of those games that you just cannot put down and you just want to play it absolutely to death. You know, it's just one of those.
I think that one had online as well. And then weirdly, they released a sequel. But even though the first game was on the Wii, the sequel was exclusive to PS3 and 360.
Right, okay.
Which seemed odd to me.
That is an odd choice, isn't it?
Mm.
But I guess... But
probably because they wanted to do more online and the Wii's online was lacking, shall we say.
Well, even the online with Switch 2 is like... Come on, Nintendo. It's 2025. It's not 1995 anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Danielle and me were on Mario Kart last night. Said, do you want to invite Jeremy to play? I said, I can't. I can't send him an invite just to come into our game. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
To set up a lobby, a private lobby.
And then it would be the three of us and 21 bots.
Yeah. Nintendo.
Yeah.
So, anyway. But yeah, but that's a good one. Super Tennis.
Yeah. So that's it for Retro Corner. Are we moving on to Platinum Watch?
Yes, I'm going to start with Claire Obscure, if you don't mind. So, yeah, it inspired me last week after our long discussion of spoiler discussion to actually tackle the Platinum for Claire Obscure, because I thought it was going to take like another 100 hours or something, but it's not. It's going to be relatively straightforward.
Right.
So
I mean, it was quite fast. I was quite surprised. So we recorded the podcast on the Wednesday.
Well, I remember saying on there, I'll probably
you
not
did
gonna
do say,
the yeah, I'm like 2 days later. I'm like, I'm gonna do
it. Wasn't even 2 days, it was the day after on the Thursday. You sent me a message going, I'm doing the Platinum. I was like, come on, dude, chill.
I thought it was 2 days.
No, it was the Thursday, it was the day after, it was within 24 hours of recording it.
Brilliant. Okay. Day after then. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yes, I was inspired.
Yeah, not wrong.
To dive back into Claire Obscure and then tackle the Platinum. So, I've already got two or three trophies on the Platinum run. I have started from scratch, started a brand new game.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a bit of fun with it this time where I didn't realize the mimes, it unlocks certain costumes and haircuts. Mm-hmm. I only did it a couple of times in my main playthrough, mm-hmm. but There's one where they got a baguette on their back.
Yeah.
And a little stripy top and a red beret and a pair of glasses. Yeah. It's hilarious. So every new costume I've been putting on, like I found one for Gustav where it's like the multicolored thing from the Gestural Village and the little stupid little hairdo that they have. I put that on him for a while. And then you can also unlock his suit that he has at the beginning of the game in Lumiere as an actual costume, which is pretty cool. Right. So I'm having having fun with it this time. Well, not that I didn't have fun with it before, but it was quite a serious interactions with characters. Mm. But you can make it a bit silly, you know, with these different pieces. It looks fun. You can have a bit of fun with it. I'm pretty much skipping all the cutscenes.
Yeah, you've seen them all, haven't you?
I've seen them all pretty much. Apart from obviously some of the side story stuff, which I might have to do as part of the main grind for the Platinum is going to be getting to level 100.
Yeah.
Now, at the end of the game, I think I was like level 48, something like that. And I was able to beat the end boss. But this, I think I'm going to have to complete the main game and then go looking for all the side stuff. Because there's stuff that I completely missed in the main playthrough, like... There's these spikes that block your way in all the different areas, like these big, like crystallized spikes.
Yeah.
And you get something later on in the game to destroy these spikes. And I never did that.
No, so I mean, love it.
Yeah, that's something new in the Platinum that I think I have to do.
Right. Yeah. I never did any of the Gestural Beaches, apparently, some of which are platforming. And from what I know of that game, I don't imagine the platforming is going to be particularly fun because it's not
terrible. It's not platforming.
Yeah, it's not set up for platforming.
No, it's terrible. So I am looking forward. I've been playing it pretty much non-stop for the last 3 or 4 days. I think I've only had one day where I've not played it. And I've made it to, where have I made it to? Made it past Gestural Village. I can't remember exactly where I got to. But about 7 or 8 hours into a new playthrough, and I'm probably about a third of the way through the game already.
Right.
So I'm going through it fairly quickly because, like I said earlier on, I'm just putting all my points into might, so it's just pure output damage, and the Pictos, which are some of your abilities, and the Luminos, which are also your abilities that you can use. If you juggle them around enough, you can put out like massive amounts of damage. Like I'm talking 10,000 damage in one hit, which is crazy. Fair enough, it is on easy mode or story mode, but you know, this is a platinum run. I'm going for platinum on this.
Luckily, none of the trophies are linked to difficulty, are they? So you don't have to worry about like finishing it on hard or anything like that.
Yeah, it's the grind. I've already messaged Kyle about it, about the grind to level 100. I think he said there's a specific place where you can grind up levels that he was going to send me. So when I get to that area, I'll have a look into that. But that is the platinum run. Hopefully we'll do it in the next few weeks, on and off, because other games are coming out. Yeah. Like Donkey Kong Bonanza, we just already mentioned. There's a new RoboCop game coming out that I want to play. There's DLC for Lies of P. So how can I fit it all in, you know?
Well, yeah.
Basically, Donkey Kong tomorrow. Yeah, I won't have to sleep. I'll make sure I eat, but maybe no sleep, less sleep.
You need sleep, you can play games.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it for my platinum run this week.
Yeah, so I've just got a little bit to touch on. So first of all, shout out to Kyle. I think he's actually playing Lies of P.
I did see him online last night playing it, yeah.
Yeah, and as far as I'm aware, he's enjoying it.
Excellent, so good news.
Good that he's getting in on that. I had so this is still in the Platinum Watch segment, but it's a non-platinum because I had a bit of a fail, which I already told you about before we recorded. So basically, after I finished the DLC, for whatever reason, I just kept playing because I still wanted more.
Well, it's a good game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially with the DLC.
I just wanted to keep playing. So I ended up doing another playthrough. And
you already completed it at three times at this point, we've got to say.
Yes.
Yeah.
But once on this platform, only once on PlayStation.
Sure.
The first two were on the original hardest difficulty on Xbox, which I don't have access to anymore because it's not on Game Pass now.
Yeah.
And so I'm still playing on PlayStation, kept playing. I've only got one ending so far. And so decided I wanted the Rise of P ending. And stupidly, when I looked it up as what you need to do, I found myself on Reddit. And instead of doing what I should have done, and fact-checked the Reddit post, I just believed Reddit on spec. And so
Oh no.
Yeah, you got your head in your hands. fair enough. So what happened, and it's very difficult to say without spoilers, and I'm trying my best not to spoil this. But anyway, I needed to get a certain level of humanity for P, and then also there's a fairly big decision near the end, and the Reddit post said I'd make decision A. So I did decision A, shall we say,
yeah,
because that's what the Reddit post said.
Yeah.
And then when I finished it, I beat Nameless Puppet, which again, even on easiest difficulty, is not the easiest boss. I hate that boss with absolute passion.
Yeah.
Did it, and then got the exact same ending, same cutscenes I'd already had already. Mm-hmm. So no further trophies. And then upon looking into it a bit further, the Reddit post was complete bollocks, and you need to make decision B to get the ending that I wanted. But also, in hindsight, my humanity level wasn't quite high enough. I think my humanity was like 2.
Right.
I think it has to be at least level 3 to get the ending I was going for. So even if I had made the right decision, I probably wouldn't have got it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's certain choices you have to make in that game to raise your humanity. Basically, you have to lie in the game to get the maximum amount of humanity, and certain NPCs have to die.
Yeah.
For your humanity to also rise as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, continue.
So, I was fucking annoyed at myself and sulked for a bit, and even uninstalled the game. I was like, right, well, fuck this game then. Platinum's not happening. I'm not completing it 2 more times. It can bugger off, blah, blah, blah.
That's a psychological thing. If I delete it, it's gone and I won't think about it.
Yeah. Oh, there's a YouTuber I watch called Flowverse who mainly plays Soulsborne games. And the amount of videos he's put out where he gets so frustrated on a boss, he like uninstalls the game. And then the video carries on. And like 2 minutes later, he's like 2 days later. And it shows him like reinstalling it again. And he must have deleted and reinstalled the game so many times.
I've only ever done that a few times, to be fair, where I've got so annoyed at a game, I've deleted it and gone back a few weeks later and reinstalled it and carried on. So yeah, it does happen, but yeah.
I don't generally do it, but having said all this, I did, I can't remember if it was the day after or maybe 2 days after, I did find myself reinstalling it and then did start playing it again. But I'd got to chapter 5 and I've gone straight back into the DLC because I realized there's some Legion arms that I missed. And some weapons that I missed. So I'm going to try and play through the DLC again and see if I can mop up some of the bits that I missed. But I'm still unsure whether I'll bother trying to go back to get the Platinum again, because I'm really not sure if I'm going to be bothered to finish it 2 more times.
Yeah, yeah, you have to have at least 2 more playthroughs.
Yeah.
Having done the Platinum, it's, you know, if you start from scratch, it's 2 playthroughs.
Yeah.
So if you made a choice and it's hooked up, then it's another 2 playthroughs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, to be confirmed with this, I'm not saying I'm 100% not getting the Platinum, but I'm also not committing to it at this point because I made such a bad decision and fucked myself over. I'm really not sure I can be bothered to play through it 2 more times. We'll see what happens. I'll forget to the end of the DLC again. That might just be it and I'll be done. I was talking to Brad about it and he was like, just walk away. At this point, I think you've done far more than a lot of people. Just leave it be, move on to something else.
Now, I've got a question to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you ask me? I've already done the Platinum.
I mean, I think, about what decision to make?
Just about any of it, if you're going to go for Platinum. I would already
I don't know, because I'm an idiot.
I'm just asking, because, like, why did you go on a Reddit post when you know somebody who's already gone?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I find
that quite amusing of, like, you know I did it, because we talked about
it. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't make, when you look at it, take a step back.
It's in the heat of the moment, because it could have been like 5 o'clock in the morning or something there where you were doing it. I don't know, but
I mean, it probably wasn't that late. But
no, I know. It was amusing. You know, I've done it, and I was like, "Why didn't you ask me? I could have steered you right." But never mind. If you do go for it again, then, you know, I'm always, a message away.
Okay.
Depending on where I am.
Well, thank you for that. I am without doubt an idiot, but there you go.
Excellent.
And so from that, are we moving on to our subjects for this week?
This week, yep.
Do you want to introduce it?
Yeah, it's a top 5 favourite protagonists.
Mm-hmm.
A little caveat, really. It's the top 5 that we, at this moment in time, it could change depending, but this is the top five that we enjoyed in, you know, in various video games.
Yes, and I think you've got some honorable mentions. I have literally got a five, and that's it.
Yeah,
and we may have some crossover.
We might have, yes.
And like you say, there's definite possibility of recency bias with mine anyway.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Probably kick off with the first one. Yeah. So the first one I've got is one I really want. This character is probably my favorite character across all the Assassin's Creed.
Right.
It's Ezio Auditore di Firenze.
Yes.
He was such a good protagonist. Ubisoft made three games with one assassin. Three. It's the only one they've done it with.
Yeah. And he's so charismatic that the first game after the Ezio trilogy ended, Assassin's Creed 3, I sacked off because, I mean, you had the character you started with, who then, spoiler for a 12-year-old game, turns out to be a Templar,
yep,
who's the main character's dad.
Hate them. Yep.
Yeah, and then you swap to his son.
Connor.
And I found Connor so boring.
Oh my God, he was so boring, wasn't he?
So devoid of personality.
Comparatively to Ezio, he was so
I sacked the game off because of it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I did have to force myself to play through the majority of Assassin's Creed 3 because Ezio was so charismatic. I don't know if it was partially because he is an Italian, a Renaissance Italian, or whether it was just the story, or it was probably all of it. The story, the setting, the acting, you know, the conditions he found himself in, you know, something about Ezio was an amazing character as an assassin.
Yeah, I can't remember who the voice actor was, but he did a really good job in all three games.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but he's also the same actor as Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't know that until I looked it up a few years ago. But
this is our first crossover. I've got Ezio on my list as well.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you see the very beginnings of Ezio. You see him being born. You see him going through his life through the three games. And then if you watch the animation, it's outside the main game. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but you see him die as well.
Oh, really?
You do, yeah. There's an animation where him is an old man, where he's basically sitting on a park bench just outside the chapel, Sistine Chapel in Rome, I think it is.
Right.
And he ends up being poisoned, and you see him die. So he's whole lifespan.
Yeah, he's pretty old in Revelations, because that's the whole thing. In Revelations, he's about, what, 55? And he's still scrubbing up rooftops?
So funny you said that, because pretty old in Renaissance times is like 52, 53, and I'm almost there.
Well, sorry, I didn't mean...
No, I just find it amusing, because he's very old in Assassin's Creed Revelations. He's like 52.
Well, like you say, it's old with a caveat. Old for...
I just find it amusing, that's all.
Old for someone who lived when he lived. Because lifespans were...
In that period, he's relatively old for that time period, definitely. Yes. Definitely. I mean, his whole family, him being the main character, obviously, but the whole Italian thing is played up to the max in these games, apart from Revelations, which starts off in Italy, but ends up being in the Middle East.
Yeah,
but even those characters were pretty good. But you know, I think as an actual Assassin's Creed, it was my favorite like trilogy of games. You know, one after the other, because they did come out a year after each other. Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood, then Revelations, and they were all really good. The character, you know, I didn't have one complaint regarding the character and his story in these games. And like I say, it's one of my favorite protagonists, but Ezio, yeah. I don't know what else to say about him, really. Has you got anything else?
He's very good. So Assassin's Creed 2 is the one that I was two achievements away from getting all 1,000 achievement points. And I think I mentioned it before, there's like 100 feathers in the game. And when I finished, I had 99.
So you had to go searching for that one.
Well, yeah, but the other problem is that even if you use a guide, there's no way to tell which of the ones you've already got and which is the one you haven't.
Yeah. So Assassin's Creed 2 was actually my first platinum trophy.
Oh, wow.
And I've got it again on the Ezio collection.
Oh, nice.
I did it last summer. I played through it again and got the platinum. I got all those feathers using a guide.
I gave up on it as a bad job. And then so you got, there's a trophy slash achievement for that, and there's another one for wearing a particular cape that you only get when you've got all 100 feathers, and you have to wear the cape in every area.
Yeah, it's the auditory cape, and you've got to wear it in each city. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So those are the two achievements I didn't get. And then I think Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, I actually preferred even to two.
Brotherhood was fantastic. It's my favorite Assassin's Creed game of that era, definitely.
And again, without touching on it too long, my favorite reason why I love Brotherhood is you get bitches, in inverted commas. And what I mean by that is you could be sat on a bench and you have your target walks past and you need to take your target out, and you've got a bitches button. You press that and they all sweep in, throw your target for you, and fuck off again. And you're just sat on the bench, like, I'm just minding my own business. And the fact they've all got the same hood on that I have is just a complete coincidence. It's nothing to do with me, honest.
That's such a video game like thing to do, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, they appear, assassinate all your targets, and then just disappear.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. But yeah.
And so you level up your clan for them to do all your work for you. And I just love that for some reason.
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
So my first one, like I say, it's probably some recency bias in this, is P from Lies of P. And
even though he never actually talks, does he?
No, he doesn't. Yeah. And he's not the only silent protagonist on my list, I should point out. So P, he's never actually called Pinocchio by anyone in the entire game.
They call him gifted, I think, or special. Yeah. But they never actually call him by name.
No. And he also gets referred to as Carlo, which is the same name as the author of Pinocchio.
Yes.
So it's alluded to that he's Pinocchio, but there's also an alternate theory that he's not, that the nameless puppet is Pinocchio. Your what comes along after.
Interesting. I thought of that.
But it's just sort of the sort of journey he goes on to become more human, and the fact that there's various points in the game where they're like, well, you can't be a puppet because you just lied, and puppets can't lie. But Geppetto has this whole, what do you call it, the Grand Covenant that he builds into the puppets he makes that they can't lie. And then he doesn't do that for P.
Yeah.
So that's how you can lie.
Yeah, because he's a special. That's why they call him special.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the whole thing that he reacts more and more like a human as it goes on. And by the end of the game, a lot of people in it seem to think he's human, even though he's not.
Yeah. No, it's a good choice. It's like I say, for a silent protagonist, he does... the journey he goes through, like say, projects a kind of emotive, especially with the DLC, you know, even in the main game, he just does do fairly, he does do expressions, although not huge, only in the cutscenes, really.
Yes.
But the way that the world reacts to him as he's going through the game, it's one of those. It's a very good, well done for a protagonist who doesn't actually say anything.
Yeah. So that's my first one. What's your next one?
So, Kratos, so from the God of War games. Now, not necessarily from God of War 1, 2, or 3, but I'm talking about the new Gods of War. So, the 2018 and the God of War Ragnarok.
Yes.
So the more experienced, the older Kratos with the beard. That Kratos. Mm-hmm. Because they gave him more depth in these games.
Yeah.
The original three games, he was just a very angry god, basically.
Yeah.
Just shouty man all the time. Just wanted to kill people.
That was it.
Yeah.
Very one-dimensional.
Yeah, not much depth to him. But in these new games, they gave him much more depth. You know, he's got a son. You know, he's got a wife, or he did have a wife.
Mm-hmm.
I think the journey that he's been through to get here, and that he's going through with his son, is really the core of the story throughout both games. And I really appreciated that, because it's not something you would expect for a game which basically where you're just killing people most of the time or killing demons or whatever.
Yeah.
But he does grow as a character, which is great to see, you know, as opposed to just having a one-dimensional like in the original three games. But I thought they did I think they must have brainstormed in the development of the God of War 2018 just to say, look, we're going to take Kratos, we're going to make him a you know, proper three-dimensional character, as in terms of emotion. I think they really hit the nail on the head with it, and they built on that foundation with the second game. It's even better than the first, I would say. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Kratos is, you know, he had so much depth to him in the newer games, especially with his son Atreus. I think that's.
Does he actually learn to call his son by his name? Because the bit I only played about 4 hours of this game,
yeah,
and the bit that bugged me, it was like boy.
Yeah, the first game is just boy. They do away with that in the second game.
Right. Okay, that's good.
But yeah, I think he only says it like once in the second game, so he always calls him Atreus.
Okay. So,
and Atreus himself is actually quite a good character. You know, they both go through a lot of shit together.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Kratos, from a story perspective in those games, is one of the really, I'd say one of my favorite protagonists, but it really came through so well in the writing for him and the dialogue and everything in these games. Yeah, he's one of my favorite ones. What's your next one?
My next one is Travis Touchdown from the No More Heroes games.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this character.
Yeah, he is an otaku, which is, I think, Japanese for geek. He's got glasses and a leather jacket, and he's very sort of snarky and sarcastic.
Sounds good.
Through the whole trilogy of games, doesn't really sort of grow that much or change. I think he's probably the same character at the end of 3 as he is at the beginning of 1, really. And I don't know, because he's an otaku, they've got a certain like image of being fairly selfish and also a bit pervy, all that kind of thing. But you do, I guess spoilers for No More Heroes games, one of the main female characters who's in the first 2 games, by the 3rd one you learn that she's Travis's wife.
Right.
And they've not mentioned that until this point.
Okay.
And I was like, that's a bit strange way to change this dynamic, that she's actually married to Travis, but you've not mentioned that anywhere. And Travis doesn't seem like the kind of character would get married.
Right.
But I don't think No More Heroes games are that strong on story. They're not really about the story that much. It's kind of like, it's there, it's perfunctory, it does what it needs to do to get the plot moving along to the next set piece. But the actual story itself is never going to be on like the Witcher level or something like that with a lot of depth.
Yeah.
But I always kind of liked this character. He's kind of cool. He's got a massive motorbike that's got like that's your only vehicle in all 3 games. Like the first game is open world, and he's got a turning circle, a bit like Wembley Stadium.
Okay.
It's fairly ridiculous trying to get around corners on the bloody thing.
Sounds like it.
And then the whole thing about the fact that he's got a laser sword, as they call it, as his weapon, which is,
yes, you can't say lightsaber, it's a laser
sword. It's a lightsaber ripoff, but they can't say it because they want to get sued by George Lucas and now Disney these days.
Yes.
And you can get like there's various like sort of weapon upgrades. You can get like a dual bladed one, and again, it's still very much a Star Wars ripoff for all of this, but you can also, when I say dual blades as well, as like having one out of either end, you can have it where you get like 2 or 3 and 1 hilt.
Yeah.
So they're all, and so like doubles or triples up.
Yeah.
For that kind of thing. And yeah, he's a cool little character. I mean, some of his attitudes towards women are definitely dodgy. he's possibly a little bit misogynist. But I still like the character all the same.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it sounds like a decent character, some of them might identify with, you know, especially being a geek, because I'm self-proclaimed.
Yeah, I mean, you have to go back to, like, when I first played No More Heroes, it's like, what, 2007? So I would have been, like, 25, 26, about his age.
Yeah.
The time they played it, whereas I'm old man these days, and I'm way beyond what Travis is supposed to be. He's not really aged in the way that characters don't do. You know, the Simpsons should all be about 45 by now, all the kids.
Well, yeah, and they're still the same age they were 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Silly, really, isn't it?
Yeah. So what's your next one?
Sam Fisher,
right,
from the Splinter Cell games.
Yes.
So, you know, he's your typical CIA Black Ops agent in the first game.
Mm-hmm.
But he does have a little bit of growth in the first trilogy, really, which was the original Splinter Cell, they're Pandora Tomorrow and Chaos Theory. That was like the original kind of trilogy.
Yeah. Now, so I had a flatmate who was really into Blacklists.
Yes, Blacklist was the last release, which came out in 2013, would you believe?
Yeah, I was about to say that that's the most recent Splinter Cell game, isn't it?
Yeah, he's the most recent game with him as the main character. Yeah, I think he did appear as a playable character in Fortnite. There was like a virtual reality version which he might have been in, I think, or he made an appearance. I can't remember exactly. But the reason I like him is because of like Michael Ironside voiced him in the first three or four games, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fourth game was Double Agent, which came out a few years after Chaos Theory, and that's where he goes through the most growth, really. Because I think in that game, his daughter gets kidnapped,
right?
And then he's on the hunt to find out who's kidnapped her and why. So he goes through quite a lot of growth in that. But the actual character, you know, because he's in this gritty kind of dark underworld of the covert ops, I really liked that. Aesthetic that he projected as a character, and with Michael Ironside doing the voice, it just made it even better with his kind of gravelly voice, you know. I'm going to do an impression of him because I don't know how we're going to do impressions, but across those original games, it just made for a compelling character to play.
Right.
And then Double Agent, it just like, you know, ramped it up, turned it up to like a 11, you know, on the emotional side. And then Blacklist was the last game it was in. It was voiced by a different voice actor, but that story was pretty decent story, and the gameplay was really good. And I was quite sad that they haven't made a new game since, because I was looking forward to like playing another game with that character and that voice actor, because it was almost like a soft reboot, really.
Yeah.
In 2013, but I guess it just didn't sell well, or Ubisoft just didn't feel like they wanted to use the character in another mainline game, because we've not been in a mainline game since. It's been 12 years.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, because I don't think Splinter Cell really classes as a niche.
Not really, no. I mean, anybody can pick up and play a Splinter Cell game.
Sold pretty well from back in the day, from what I remember.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the whole premise of the first game was you had to stay in the dark and not use light, and that's what it was about.
Yeah.
And that made its way through all the games, where a Double Agent was less so. It was more, action orientated than stealth, I would say. But kind of Blacklist went back to the stealth, which is the famous night vision cameras on the top of his head that he used to put down over his eyes so he can see in the dark and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Sam Fisher, I really, really enjoy playing him as a character. And like I say, there's that gritty kind of dark Black Ops persona, which I was found compelling at the time.
Yeah, cool.
What's your next one?
So I've got less left now. So Ezio, we've already talked about, so I won't mention him. We'll skip over him. So my next one is Samus Aran from the Metroid games.
Oh, Samus, yeah. This is one of my honourable mentions.
So she's been the protagonist for basically every Metroid game there's ever been,
even Other M.
Yeah, well, we'll come on to that briefly in just a moment. I was gonna say she almost kind of falls into the silent protagonists,
yes,
for the most part,
yes.
But Metro Prime 3, she spoke,
mm-hmm.
and then Other M, which came after Metro Prime 3. She wouldn't fucking show up.
Yeah, that's the way she does the most talking. Yeah.
Yeah.
To annoyance, to be fair.
Yeah. And that game as well, I remember, even though it's a 3D game, it's third person 3D, they have you turn the Wii Remote sideways and use the D-pad on the Wii Remote to try and control a 3D game.
Yeah.
And whoever thought that was a good idea, fucking mental.
Well, the reason I played Other M was I really enjoyed the Metroid games on the Game Boy Advance and on the GameCube.
Yep.
Metroid Prime. Mm-hmm. And I got Other M thinking, this game's going to be really good. And it was just not.
I mean, it wasn't Nintendo first party. They got, was it Ninja?
Ninja Theory?
Yeah, they got them to make it for them. And it just wasn't good. Wasn't a good version.
It wasn't good.
But I think she's one of the first female characters for a protagonist I ever remember.
Right.
And I can't say I really played many of the early games. Like I didn't play Metroid on the NES. I didn't play Super Metroid on the SNES back in the day. I've tried playing it since with very little success. It's not a good game. Without doubt, Super Metroid is a classic, and you can understand very much why people put it in their top fives ever. It's arguably the very first Metroidvania ever released. But yeah, I never really got on that well with the early ones. Apparently, if you 100% Super Metroid, you get a still, not a cutscene, a still of her in a bikini.
That's right, you do. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, so this is not something that would fly these days. I can't see Nintendo doing it in Metroid Prime 4 when you get to the end of 100% it, suddenly stick her in a bikini. It wouldn't go down well in 2025.
No.
But it's something that they did back in the day in 94 when Super Metroid came out.
Yeah, I mean, I found as a playable character, not so much the Game Boy Advance games, but probably more identified with her in the Metroid Prime game, I would say, especially the remastered. It's where you see the reflection of her
Yes,
in
in
the
the
helmet,
visor.
which is pretty cool.
Very impressive.
And then Other M, you kind of try to, beef up her character, but it just fell flat, really. But as a female protagonist, one of the few, yeah, she's pretty compelling to play, I would say.
Yeah, it's like I say, she's a bounty hunter and got all this big, bulky 80s style like shoulder pads going on and stuff. And they've never really changed that. Even if you play in Metroid Prime 4, if you do get to see her as a character, she will probably still have that same design as she's always had since
Yeah, I
the
mean, it's a classic design, isn't it?
80s.
So yeah, she probably will have that same design, especially if it's a Metroid Prime game. But yeah.
And there's no denying the quality of when Metroid's at its best, like Metroid Prime games and some of the other Metroid games. Like, I'm not saying they're not good games, just the 2D ones I've never really got on with.
Yeah.
I didn't play Metroid Dread or the previous one. What was the previous 3DS one?
Oh, Metroid Samus Returns?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Samus Returns, wasn't it? Pretty
Yeah,
sure it was. Yeah.
yeah. And the same developer did both of them, like, and Dread got really good reviews and
I haven't
sold a
played
lot.
Dread. I want to play Dread. I just not got around to playing it.
It sold a lot on Switch 1, so I'm guessing Switch 2 is probably going to be the way to play it if you do want to play it at this point, because it'll probably run better.
Yeah, probably. I will play it at some stage.
And
Yeah.
it sold like 1 million on Switch, which is because the weird thing with Metroid games is they've never been biggest sellers.
No, they've got like inconsistently sold, but not much hugely.
Yeah, like they never sell along the same sort of level of like Mario, Zelda, Nintendo's
I'm
biggest
hope
hits.
I'm hoping Metroid Prime 4 bucks that trend, because if it's really successful, hopefully it'll carry on making Metroid games.
Well, yeah.
You know.
I would have thought even if it doesn't end up being a mega hit, they'll probably still make another Metroid game after Prime 4, whether it's a first person one or a 2D one.
Yeah.
Like you say, if it does sell more, we're more likely to get one sooner than later.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll have to see.
What's your next one?
Nathan Drake from the Uncharted series.
Right, yes.
So he's very much your American, charming, adventurer, Indiana Jones type. Identified with him straight away when I started playing the original Uncharted Drake's Fortune on the PS3. One of the reasons I got a PS3 was to play that game. And, he's just immediately likable character. Misguided in some things, but compelling to play. Really well voiced by Nolan North, one of his best voice acting gigs, I would say, in my opinion. Did a really good job at projecting the character, making him come to life. And the actual character himself, his interaction with Sully and Helena in the first game, and then Chloe in the second game. And then I'm trying to remember the antagonist is in the third game. I know she's a woman, but I can't remember her name. And then in Uncharted 4, Thief's End is where it's the pinnacle, Nathan Drake. Such an excellent game made by Naughty Dog. I've played through it in its entirety twice, I think. Because it's not a short game, Uncharted 4, it's quite long. Even when you play like playing it for trophies, which I have done. It's still like even on easy mode, it's still talking about 10, 12 hours easy. It's more like a 15, 18 hour game if you play it on normal difficulty, but it's good. It's a good game, and him is the main character, and his backstory. You get more backstory in Uncharted 4 about him and his brother Sam. You know, Sam played by Troy Baker in Uncharted 4 and Uncharted Lost Legacy, where the Lost Legacy is not, he's not the main character. Chloe's the main character in that one. But, you know, he's been in, I think he's been in Fortnite. You know, they got a skin of him in Fortnite. There was also Uncharted Golden Abyss on the Vita, which I did play as well. I think I completed it. Pretty sure I did complete it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even in that, he was really a good character to play. Just that kind of swashbuckling American, I know what's best for me and kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
So it's a bit strange, I thought. I mean, you're much more the Uncharted fan than me, but the film, they cast Tom Holland.
Yeah, I was a bit... I've not watched the movie.
I haven't seen the film. But there's a short fan film where Nathan Fillion plays him.
I watched that, yes. That is very good.
And he seems much more apt for the character than Tom Holland.
Definitely.
More about the age that the character's supposed to be.
I think what they were going for in the movie, because it was more of a younger version of Nathan Drake, because Solly's younger in it as well. He played by Mark Wahlberg, which miscast in my opinion. But I've not seen the movie purely because that's not the Nathan Drake that I know. Do you know what I mean?
Wasn't the movie supposed to be like the first of a trilogy, but then it's kind of died because the first film didn't do that well?
Yeah, it's Hollywood again, you know, putting their oar in where they don't really understand the character or the motivations or, you know, the fan base. Not that I'm saying they should pander to fans. They can have an artistic vision, but at least keep it, you know, similar to the source material, like they did with The Last of Us. You know, they didn't change the age of Joel. They didn't change the age of Ellie. They kept the main story beats.
Yeah.
You know, they did make their put their own stamp on it, and that might, you might like that or you might not like that. It just depends on your opinion. But yeah, when I saw the trailer for the movie, I was like, nah, this ain't the chart that I know. You know what I mean?
No.
But yeah, no, Nathan Drake. That's a good one for me.
Right. So because we already did Ezio, I've only got one left.
Okay.
Which again is in my silent protagonists, which is Link from The Legend of Zelda.
Hey, good old Link from Legend of Zelda. You know, I got this new watch today.
Yeah.
You know the guy's name? Link.
What, the guy that sold you it?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
So that's that because of anybody you know who plays Legend of Zelda? Yeah, my granddad, he's a big video game fan. I'm called Link.
His granddad made him get called Link. That's amazing.
I was quite impressed about that, which is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I did say to him as well, because Robin Williams' daughter, his name's Zelda.
Yes, because of the original Legend of Zelda game on the NES.
He knew about that as well, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, Link, go on.
I think, weirdly, Robin Williams' daughter, who is still around, and Robin Williams, R.I.P., from what I understand, is not really a big Legend of Zelda fan. No, her dad was. And she's got the name, but she isn't.
No, well, never mind. I didn't actually ask the Link in the shop today whether he was a video game fan or not. I didn't actually ask him. I should have done.
No, oh, never mind.
So Link, now, are we talking about the... Because obviously Link goes all the way back to NES, doesn't he?
Yeah, this is thing. I think mainly when I think of this is again probably showing my age. I never played the NES version.
I never played NES. The SNES was the first version I played.
Yes,
Link to the Past was the first one I played.
Yeah. So if you say this character and who do you think of? I think of, like you say, the Link to the Past version, Ocarina of Time version, Majora's Mask. I don't tend to automatically think of the Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom version that we've had more recently, but that's probably just my age.
Yeah. I mean, there's been different iterations of, because this is the confusing thing. If you don't know much about The Legend of Zelda, there's different iterations of quote unquote the same character.
Yes. Like
the version of Link in the Minish Cap is the first version of Link.
Right.
I think in the timeline.
Okay.
I don't know if that's right or not, but I'm pretty sure it is. And then every iteration after him is called Link, but it's not necessarily in the same...
No.
It's in different timelines.
So you reminded me, this is a bit of an aside, but there's a YouTube set of three short films called A Link to the Future that combine Legend of Zelda with Back to the Future. And it's how they try and, like, explain all the timeline. if you've never seen any of them, I'll send you a link to one of them because they're worth a go. And it, like they take the mick out of the Legend of Zelda timeline.
It's all over the place. If you play the games chronologically, you're not playing through the timeline chronologically because it's all over the place.
Like they kept deciding, no, this game is the first in the series, and then they released another game, like, no, this game is the first in the series, and you go recent games and further back in the chronology.
The timeline aside, Link as a character, even though he's a silent protagonist, what's the, you know, his overall quality, do you think?
Like integrity, standing up for the right thing to do. Like you say, he doesn't say anything, and that's, I think that goes back to the limitations of the NES back in the day, and then that kind of stuck with the character even when you did start to get to more recent stuff where the character could be voiced, because he hadn't been voiced for so long. I think they were a bit wary of making people get annoyed with him, I guess. And
but the only time he was voicing was those awful 3DO games.
Yes,
was it Philips CDI? I can't remember which one. One of the two.
Yeah, it was Philips CDI. But also, do you ever see the animated show?
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, he's voiced in that.
He's gonna have to be voiced in the movie, surely.
Well, yeah, they've just announced the casting for both Link and Zelda for this new film, haven't they? And I have to admit, I hadn't heard of either of them that are playing the main two.
They're fairly young actors, aren't they?
Yeah. But like you say, he'll have to be voiced in the film. I just wonder if he's going to be like strong silent type that doesn't say a lot, but only says a little.
Yeah, maybe. But no, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed playing as Link. You know, he just projects that kind of heroism, really. You know?
Well, yeah, it's the whole thing from the time, isn't it? He's the hero of time.
Yeah, without really saying anything other than grunting a couple of times. You know, it's a lot to be said about you know, less is more kind of thing.
So that's the end of my list. How many have you got left of your main
list? One main one left. We've got a couple of honorable mentions. Okay. And the main one is Geralt of Rivia. You knew I was going to say this.
I was going to say, surprise, surprise.
I mean, I said it before, I'll say it again. I could talk about Witcher 3 all day long.
Yeah.
But, you know, I won't. But Geralt of Rivia is, you know, the even, and I'm talking about the video game version and the book version and the TV series version.
Right, yeah.
The kind of amalgamation of all of the same character, but from different media. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite version of him is probably the video game version.
Right.
And Witcher 3. He's pretty good in the books, to be honest. Yeah. He's quite jovial, more jovial in the books, I'd say, than the TV show.
Right. I mean, but I think Henry Cavill nailed him for that first three seasons.
It made a difference. He's a very big fan of the Witcher books.
Yes.
It made a big difference. I'm interested to see how Liam Hemsworth does in the season 4.
I'm very dubious.
I will watch it. Just because I watched all of them. I didn't enjoy season 3 that much, I must admit.
It was all right.
I gritted my teeth and got through it. Yeah. So I will watch it just to the end because I want to. But the video game version, specifically The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, you know, the quips that he makes, you know, the situations that he puts himself in or the situation he finds himself in, mm-hmm. He's so deadpan sometimes, it's funny, you know. It's a bit like in the first series of the TV show where, you know, a load of people show up to fight Geralt and he just goes, fuck, that's been meaned to death. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's similar in the game where he's just like, oh, God, here we go again kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't show a huge amount of emotion, except when it comes to Ciri in the game. Mm-hmm. When Ciri's involved, he kind of forgets himself, and it's not the stoic version of Witcher that we know. He's very much emotive towards her.
Yeah,
she's basically his daughter.
Yeah,
and that's how, as a parent, you know how that, you know, as a parent, you know what that feels like. So you can kind of identify with him there. But just his interactions with all the characters along the way, you know, Triss Merigold, Yennefer. You know, all the different characters that he has to come across and he has to deal with. It's just something about him that I will always like, such a likable kind of roguish quality to him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
you know, could go on about it all day. I won't bore everybody. But yeah, I would say he's probably, well, I've already said Witcher 3 is my favourite game of all time. He's probably my favourite video game protagonist of all time, I would say. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Geralt of Rivia.
He's going to be in Witcher 4, isn't he? But he's not the playable
character. He won't be a playable character. He will be in Witcher 4, I think, yeah. Right. Ciri's the main character in Witcher 4.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good. I mean, I liked Ciri as a character as well. She's pretty good. You play as Ciri in The Witcher 3. Mm-hmm. There's certain sections where you play as her.
Yeah.
She's not a witcher in that. She's just been trained by witches.
Yeah.
In this new one, I think she is a witcher. Mm-hmm. She has the eyes. She has the skills. She drinks the potions.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder whether she's actually gone through the trial of the grasses to turn into a witcher. She must have done.
Right.
So... yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with that one. But a couple of honorable mentions I've got are Solid Snake from the Metal Gear Solid series.
Yeah.
So that's Solid Snake in Metal Gears 1 and 2 and 4. Mm-hmm. And is it Naked Snake in Metal Gear Solid 3? I think it is.
Right.
Not the same character, but voiced by the same voice actor.
Yes, it's David Hayter, isn't it?
Yeah, David Hayter. He's very compelling to play as a character. The first time I played that Metal Gear Solid on the PlayStation 1, my brother was gushing about it, and I played it, and I was blown away by it.
Yeah.
You know, played through that game a couple of times. So definitely a honorable mention to him. And also, I'm very conscious this is the only female that I've got in my honorable mentions other than Samus. It's Lara Croft.
Right.
From the Tomb Raider series.
Yeah. Nothing to do with triangle boobies, honest.
No, nothing to do with triangle boobies. When the first game came out, I think it was 96.
Yes.
I was like 22. So, you know, I got past the triangle boobies.
Yeah.
But she's pretty sassy. You know, she's got some sass about her. Mm-hmm. And they've made a couple of, well, they've made three movies.
Yeah.
Two with Angelina Jolie and one with, oh, God, I can't remember her bloody name. The Who's, is it?
Yeah, I haven't seen it, the new one.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's all right. It's not nothing to write home about.
The internet decided it was rubbish because she's flat-chested.
That's such bullshit.
Yeah.
It's the character we're talking about here. But, you know, the original five or six Tomb Raider games, she did have kind of an arc there. Mm-hmm. And she did grow as a character a little bit, but she was more about sass and don't fuck with me kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the newer
game. What was the game that got all the hate? Was it Angel of Darkness?
Angel of Darkness, which I never played.
What number was that? Was that seven? Was
number six.
Six.
That was number six.
Right, okay.
Which I never played. My brother played it because I got rid of my PS2 by then, so I never actually played it.
Okay.
And then the newer trilogy, which started in 2013, I think it was just called Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
The more vulnerable Lara, which I thought was a good way of establishing the character, and she kind of had an arc.
Yeah.
But the last Tomb Raider, the game they did show the Tomb Raider, it was boring. The game was boring. Really boring to play. I played it, but it was boring. Rise of the Tomb Raider, they hit the sweet spot with that game.
It was the second one, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the character, they really hit the sweet spot. Mm. But Shadow of the Tomb Raider, that's why they didn't make any more, because it didn't sell as well, and it wasn't very compelling.
No.
So, you know, and there was the, 3D perspective ones, like Guardian of Light, I think it was, on PS3.
Isometric ones,
that's it, yeah. Same character. They weren't bad games. But yeah, honourable mention to Lara Croft.
Yeah, and then so we've already talked about Samus.
Yeah, but that's all I've got. So I think it brings that to the outro, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you want me to do it?
Yes, please.
Okie doke. So you can email us if you've got any feedback.
Oh. Sorry, maybe double check. So Matt with 1T allegedly is writing us another email. I'm just double checking he's not actually sent it.
Right, okay.
No, he hasn't.
No.
I did tell him no more essays, please.
Fair enough. But if you do want to email us, you can email us.
Yes.
At twoguysfreeconsoles, that's all letters, no numbers, @yahoo.com. We've got a Discord channel, which is free to join.
It is free, yeah.
Yep, the link is in the description. You can get us on Blue Sky at Two Guys Three Consoles. They're same again on Instagram.
Yeah.
We do have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. You can search Two Guys Three Consoles and you'll find our page. We've also got a YouTube channel, which is audio only.
Yep.
But we publish our podcast on there every week. Mm-hmm. We've also got TikTok, which I haven't used for like a good couple of months now, must be maybe 3 months. Don't use it. I've actually limited myself to 10 minutes of TikTok a day because you can just sit there scrolling through stupid videos. So,
good for you.
I've set a limit on it, 10 minutes a day.
Right.
And my personal Instagram, you can get me at mleach26. Mm-hmm. And my personal Blue Sky, you can get me at mattleach1.
Right, nice. So my personal Instagram is j_monster. And my Blue Sky is jmonster with no space, no underscore. Is that right?
For episode 25, yeah.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Cheers, bye.
Bye.